Welcome back to the More Than Running podcast. I'm your host, Dana Giordano, and I'm so excited today to welcome Nia Atkins, who is the newest member of the Brooks Beast Squad and a graduate from the University of Pennsylvania in nursing, an overall phenomenal human. And without further ado, Nia, welcome.
Hi, Dana. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So I give you a brief introduction, but when people ask, who is Nia, how do you respond?
Yeah. So my name is Nia. I graduated from the University of Pennsylvania this year in 2020 with a degree in nursing and nutrition. And right now I'm a professional runner for the Brooks Beasts and pursuing a nursing career on the side. I'm studying for the NCLEX, and that's pretty much me professionally in a nutshell.
Wow. Did you always know that you wanted to be a nurse?
I did, honestly. There was a brief period where I actually wanted to be a professional soccer player.
Really?
I think whatever sport I was doing, I wanted to be professional in that sport. And I played soccer for such a long period of time that naturally that thought came into play. I hope I didn't disappoint my 10-year-old self with being a professional runner. But
we'll so that was it when you were 10 years old and you grew up in California?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, San Diego.
So how did you end up at, I kind of want to start in college. So how did you end up at UPenn from California?
Yeah, so UPenn has a really great nursing school. They were number one nursing school at the time. So naturally, because I knew I wanted to do nursing, it was one of the schools that I looked at. And when I got to the East Coast, I absolutely loved it. I figured this is a new experience, definitely a different environment. And when I met the team, I knew this is where I wanted to be. They were just fantastic. I instantly made friends there and just clicked with a lot of different people. So it just seemed like the right fit.
And who was your coach for all 4 years at UPenn? Did you have different coaches or?
Oh yeah. I've been through quite a few coaches at Penn. The head coach of the program, Steve Dolan, has been pretty much consistently coaching me for the past 3 years, but we've had a couple different assistant coaches. The coach that recruited me didn't end up training me for my freshman year. I was coached by Julie Benson. And then my sophomore year, Chelsea France, and like a little bit into junior year as well. But I think, yeah, Coach Dolan pretty much coached me from sophomore year to senior year. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm an Ivy League graduate too. So 2016. So about 4 years ahead of you. So not really any overlap there. But when I started at Dartmouth, UPenn was not very good. Distance running, they
True.
Were not. And
no, yeah, you're not
in
wrong.
The past 4 years, there's just been this kind of massive development, and you were kind of at the core of that, it seems like, from an outsider's perspective.
Thank you. I mean, I really can't take credit for it. I think we have a phenomenal coaching staff. I think especially my senior year, it really came together with the right resources. Even when you incorporate strength training, we have a new strength training coach, Michelle Pfeiffer, who's great. And then like in the training room, we just got Megan, who's fantastic too. So I think all the pieces kind of came together late. And I think the freshmen came in, another one of our coaches, Coach Dobson, said it best, like they came in with a winning attitude. Like they came in and winning is all that they knew. So that's what they expected. And I think when we were coming into the program, we really had to work for it. It was a little different. Like we were the ones that kind of helped get them to where they are now, but they're the ones that really took off and really carried it through. So, yeah.
Did you also compete in cross country every season?
I did, yeah.
What was that like
cross country?
You're not a fan. Because you're an 800 meter, seems like, specialist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed, ironically, training for cross country and being a part of the team. I think that aspect is great, but I think running for that long, racing for that long is a challenge for me. But I think once I'm done with it, I know if I can handle this, it's just going to make it so much easier when I do step on the track. And if I want to go up one day and run a mile or even for the 8-2, it translates pretty nicely.
Yeah, I was stalking your profile a little bit on UPenn Athletics. So there might be some errors here, but it seems like your high school PR on the 8 was somewhere around 2:10, correct? You, it's the one I saw something that said 208, the It's like either your freshman or sophomore year. Like, Nia got a PB of 208.
Yeah.
You finished the two flat PR.
Yeah.
So was that kind of, was there one year that you kind of, you just jumped up a ton, or was it very consistent over time development at UPenn?
I think it was a combination of both. In high school, my senior year, I only ran a 210. My junior year, I kind of had a breakthrough race once and ran a 208, but it was like a 208 high, but I really was kind of around that 210 range. And then when I came here, all of freshman year, every single race, it was 208 something, 208 something, 208 something. And I knew I was ready for a breakthrough. It just didn't really come together yet. And I think sophomore year, it kind of exploded, but it was very gradual. It was first 207, then 206, then 205, then 204. And then just from sophomore year on, it just continued to develop slowly. But I definitely, I think, raced myself there slowly. I think each race was a little bit better. And over time, I got more confident too, which I think really helped me perform well at bigger meets like nationals. And that was when it really started to come together. So I would say maybe junior year was kind of that breakthrough moment for me at indoor nationals.
Yeah, runner up.
Yeah.
And there's two things I definitely want to talk about, like your runner up performances, first of all, though. So with COVID, do you had a senior season that was lost?
Yeah.
So was that your goal, to not be the runner up anymore?
It was definitely my goal. I think even last year, looking towards outdoors, I had to be optimistic and think, you know, I can go into this wanting to be a champion. I can go into this training and mentally thinking, you know, I'm going to win this. I'm going to be an NCAA champion. And I think that mindset was drastically different than the mindset I went into indoor nationals with and any race before that. And I think that carried over into my senior year. And even from the beginning, I was training with that mindset. And instantly, I could see the results. Like at Boston with the two flat, I kind of, it just felt different. Training was better. Everything just kind of fell together more nicely because I was more confident in myself, honestly. So I was kind of hoping that that would all come together nicely for indoor nationals. Just because it didn't for indoor nationals doesn't mean it won't for a bigger race in the future now that I'm pro. So we'll see.
Yeah, 100%. And I think there's something, we'll see if you think the same thing, but kind of in the Ivy League where HEPS and the conference meet is the pinnacle for a lot of people. So I think it does take a little bit of time and confidence to think a little bit bigger, especially at those national meets. So for me, for example, like I was at the national meets, but I was not performing. And it took until my last race, my senior year, to really have a competitive performance. But it seems like you attacked that barrier your junior year and decided that, no, I'm bigger than the Ivy League.
But I think you summed it up beautifully within the Ivy League, just kind of that mentality, like HEPS is really what we build for. And that's what we put all of our energy into and our mindset into. So I think it does take a little bit longer maybe to think bigger than that. And I think now for the newer generations in the Ivy League, like I think they're seeing and they're starting to think bigger sooner because of what like I've been able to accomplish, what you've been able to accomplish, and like several others at this point. I'm hoping that it continues, the trend continues, and you see some earlier breakthroughs. So it should be fun to keep up with.
Definitely. So in the past couple of weeks, there's been obviously a ton of tumultuous events, one of them being the Brown men's track and field team getting cut. Did you feel like that had any personal impact on you?
Yeah, I definitely felt for the Brown team. I know our Penn Track group meets were going crazy and trying to figure out ways that we could help them and who to talk to kind of get them back reinstated. And my coaches thought similarly. They were like, this just is really unfortunate for their program and would really like to see them reinstated. Because, I mean, when you think about it, HEPS is what we all build towards. That's our favorite meet of the year. And just not having a group there just won't seem right. It just won't seem normal. So we all kind of wanted to, you know, keep history intact and hopefully see all of their hard work pay off. Cause I mean, it's really getting the short end of the stick, not having a track season at an Ivy League school, because if you transfer, you know, there's a chance that you'll lose that degree that you went to school for. When you go to Brown, like you go to Brown for a reason. So it's kind of hard deciding between school and track when you went there for both. So definitely felt for them.
Yeah, especially the late announcement. I think it was not even giving those kids an opportunity to make another decision. But thankfully, it was only 12 days of turmoil, and they put the full court press on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they'll definitely come into the new year more appreciative of having a season. And I think they're really going to, you know, across the Ivy League in general, I think you're really going to see some more special performances just because, you know, we're not taking this for granted anymore. Everybody that went through the 2020 season. So,
yeah. And so the Ivy League was one of the schools that said we are not going to grant additional fifth year opportunities to students due to COVID.
Right.
Did that kind of change your decision making of, did you have any thoughts of wanting to do a fifth year somewhere for that last senior season? Did you have any remaining eligibility left other than the senior season?
To be honest, not really. I kind of knew that I wanted to go pro pretty early on. I think I toyed with the idea naturally for a little bit, but I didn't like the idea of going through two transition periods from Penn to another school and then later from that school on to the pro realm. I thought there was a lot of risk there for getting injured and not performing well. I kind of wanted a smoother transition. And because there's so much time now with this pandemic, I figured now would be a great time to make the big jump to go pro and transition slowly. Especially since, you know, 2021's really the season. 2020, we'll see what happens, but I do like the idea that I do have more of a safety blanket of training and gearing myself up and getting used to it before I really have to get going. So,
yeah. And I would say that they, from my point of view, correct me if I'm wrong, but the 800 is kind of one of those really fun open events where it could be, obviously we have Ajay at the top of the sport and I've known her since high school and just kind of a lot of people who have Raven global success. So definitely high level competitors, but it seems like there is opportunities for people to break in. Does that excite you?
It does excite me. I definitely am aware of the level of competition within the United States alone in the 800. It's honestly very motivating to know that, you know, if I want to go to Worlds, if I want to make teams, go to the Olympics, like I have to be performing up there with them. And to know that, you know, if I'm performing up there with them or near them, that's also doing well in the world level too, if that makes sense. So I think kind of knowing that's tangible for the United States is very motivating. And I'm very fortunate to be considered to be a part of the conversation with those girls. And I think that's another reason why I really wanted to take the next step and go pro, is because it is very challenging as a college student to try to compete with the best in the world. So it was definitely time to make that switch.
Especially with a full-time course load as well. You're not only competing with the best in the world, you have it's a full-time job being a student athlete.
It really is. It really is. Being in the NCAA is very challenging, very challenging. And I think for the goals that I've set for running now, I did want to set myself up best for 2021. So,
did you have to take any finals or midterms in hotel rooms and the classic? At Dartmouth, I think I took every single final in a hotel room due to NCAA.
Really?
Oh, I think it's probably because we are in quarters, but
I know some of my teammates have certainly had to do that. What I like to do, nursing's a little different because we have exams every single week. So what I would do is it's a little wild, but they rotate very nicely. And some of them are in-person exams. So I just have to take them early before I left. So the week before was always super hectic. But once I got there, it was like a mini vacation before I had to get back to work.
That mini vacation resonates with me so much. I remember being able to sit on the bus and just be like, it's okay to not work for a second. Like I can just sit here and listen to music or watch some dumb TV.
Yeah, the bus rides were really nice. It definitely gave you a lot of time to do whatever you wanted. A lot of people on my team did study on the bus. I think I chose one way. Like if I went, I was going to study on my way there, then chill on my way back. But there's definitely opportunities for relaxing. So,
And I think that's something that's really unique to the Ivy League too, is like the hardcore competitiveness of the studying, even within the teams of,
yeah,
when doing my research on you, you're obviously very accomplished. I saw they were in the Sphinx Society as well and kind of very, had a lot of accolades at UPenn, but you're surrounding yourself with people who are achieving at the highest level in their own individual majors as well.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think that's something that's pretty unique to the Ivy League. It's kind of like a melting pot of different majors and different aspirations, even within the same interest group, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're so right. On the bus, I feel like if I was sitting next to a bus partner that was really diligent and wanted to study, I'd be like, all right, I guess I'm studying too. I'm going to pull out my laptop so I can be associated with you guys.
100%. That's amazing. So you are in Seattle now. You just mm-hmm. signed a week ago, was about a week, with the Brooks Beast. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely been a very big change from Philadelphia. For sure. The weather is honestly a lot nicer. I know a lot of people are like, Seattle's really gray.
You're in it in the nicest time of the year.
This is the nicest time of the year. And I actually really do like the rainy weather or like the cloudy weather, because I think that's great running weather. I really enjoy
it. I'm not convinced you're from California now.
I promise I am. But yeah, I definitely, I mean, honestly, this is more like California weather because it's in the 70s and like 80s, and Philly was more 90s and humid. Amen. So,
yeah. I know, you miss the humidity, right?
I do not. I guess I am a West Coast person at heart at the end of the day. Little did I know, but I did enjoy my time on the East.
Did you have a relatively smooth process when looking at your pro groups? I mean, UPenn is in Philadelphia. There's obviously a very strong 800 meter women's group in the place that you formerly resided.
Yeah.
Can you explain what was that like for you?
Yeah, it was definitely nice. I think especially with all of this going on, knowing like I have an option, a really, really objectively great option right here in Philly. At my disposal if I wanted to go that route. They're also, I mean, the East Coast is very saturated with fantastic middle distance runners, and there's groups all along the Eastern Seaboard. So I kind of knew, like, you know, I can't go wrong with a lot of groups here. COVID definitely did limit my ability to go visit groups. It's a lot like in college, you get official visits for people that don't really understand how it works. So I did come out here and visit Brooks in the fall, like pretty early on, and I've been talking to them for a while. And I really liked it a lot here. I did like the idea of changing it up and leaving Philly, especially with COVID and doing it online and kind of living in Philly, not as a college student. I realized I kind of needed a change. And I also really like the structure of Brooks. I like the fact that it's a formal group and all of the resources are at my disposal here. Cause I'm a new pro runner. I don't really know what I need. So trying to find that on my own would have been very difficult. So that was another huge reason why I came here. Obviously the people are great. And it's a really good opportunity to work closely with the brand, because Seattle is where their headquarters are, and this is the only group, that they have. So it's really nice to kind of have everything right here too, and be a part of different departments and kind of work with the brand really closely. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think it seems to me like that plays with your personality too, be kind of like Ivy League student athlete, you know, like constantly having those other parts of your life. I know one thing that I struggled with when I first became a professional runner was kind of not being busy all the time and having free time. And I was like, I don't know what to do with free time. What is free time?
Exactly. You understand perfectly, which is why this is like great talking to you. Yeah, it's definitely nice being here too, because I think Brooks, there are many opportunities to structure my free time that work really well with my schedule, with their schedule too. Like if I wanted to intern with the brand, they would work around my schedule very easily, and it's a paid internship. So like there's a lot of opportunities here outside of running, because they do value us outside of the running realm too, which is really cool.
Yeah, I definitely think that's kind of the model of the future too, is seeing athletes, especially female athletes, as more than just your performance. I mean, this is one of the main reasons why I started this podcast was because I just didn't feel like there was enough representation kind of female athletes, especially younger, developing, up and coming women who I've been interested in, know and respect, but don't have the largest platform. So that's kind of where I'm coming from, of wanting to elevate those voices, especially with people who are doing more than running aspect things. So hearing about your passion for nursing, that is something that I definitely still want to get into a little bit. So where does nursing play into Nia's life in Seattle?
Yeah, that's what I'm still trying to figure out. Honestly, right now I'm studying for my boards, and I'm planning to take them in late August, and I'm not quite sure how that's going to fit into my running schedule quite yet. But back in Philly, my clinical rotations, I felt like it was a very nice break from running. Like, I felt like when I was in clinical, I was 100% in clinical and focused there, and vice versa with running. It's just something that I love to do equally as much as running, to be honest. So I think here, figuring out how to incorporate nursing into my life schedule would definitely help me balance and step away from the sport to a healthy degree. So yeah, that's what I'm looking into now, is finding out a way to do that. Because a nursing shift is traditionally 3-12 hours a week. And they're pretty long shifts, and leaves you a narrow window to train, especially if you're training with a group like I'd be doing here. So it's definitely going to be trying to find something part-time or per diem, or maybe shadow someone or an internship, just something to fill in the gap. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's probably pretty nice too, being in a larger city, that you have a lot of options if you wanted to do nonprofit work or anything else, that you're kind of coming with all the resources as Philadelphia is the same as Seattle.
Yeah, yeah. I do think there will be more public health nursing opportunities too in the future, just because of obviously like the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic. And then also too, the Black Lives Matter movement has brought up a lot of, has brought to surface a lot of just issues that have been a problem for a while within the community. So I think between those two things, there will be more opportunities for nurses to work formally in the community setting too.
So recently you penned an article in Runner's World, kind of switching gears a little bit to Black Lives Matter. So you wrote a pretty personal article in Runner's World about a relatively scary experience that you had being verbally harassed on campus?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of your experience, which seemed like a decently positive experience with police force, but recognizing that is not the norm for Black men and women in America having that relationship with police. How have you, how has the response been since that article?
I think one of the reasons why I really wanted to do that, and why I wanted to share that story, is to make it the conversation a bit more tangible for people within my immediate circle. Mm-hmm. And to also kind of paint the picture of a world where, like, everybody is protected, if that makes sense, and everybody feels safe going to the police, which even I didn't feel safe in that moment. And it's funny because that day I was wearing pen gear, and I think that also really helped with the situation. That's something that I didn't really bring up. But the other day I was in Penn Park in Brooks stuff, and I was taking pictures with one of my friends, and none of us were wearing Penn stuff, and we were kind of aggressively kicked out. So it is just kind of like, it was something that I felt like it was a good day to be a Penn athlete and to wear a Penn shirt, because I think that also could have contributed to me being taken care of, because that's their job, is to take care of Penn students, regardless of the color that we are. So I think, I think that's something that also, there's just a lot of different facets to the issue, but I think I thought that I was safer in Penn Park than other places, but it really was because of my identity as a Penn student, and not because, you know, that officer happened to be, or those officers happened to be, you know, receptive to my concerns, because they were the same officers later that were pretty aggressive about making sure that we got kicked out.
Wow.
So it's just very different experiences from the same people. So I think, yeah, it's definitely been a struggle kind of navigating that, especially right now, because I think any Black person in America right now just you know, kind of turns around when they hear sirens or, you know, like when they're walking by police officers, kind of tense up. That's something that has always been an issue, but right now it's even heightened because even though there are conversations that are happening, you know, we're still hearing stories of people dying. So not even dying, getting murdered, saying
justice,
death instead of
justice hasn't happened for so many of these people too. And I feel like every day there's another story about someone. I mean, Breonna Taylor's murders haven't been implicated, and it's just there's so many stories that it's almost hard to keep up in a way, but you still want to pay respect and understand and look at every single situation. One thing that I learned recently was that Camden, which is close to Philadelphia, was one of the first cities in the U.S. to technically defund their police department. And I didn't personally know what defund the police meant about a month ago. I had no idea. And I'm from New Jersey, and I didn't know. And this happened in 2012 when I still lived in New Jersey. And it was it's just been such an – and I come from a perspective where – an Ivy League educated athlete, and I thought I knew and understood, and just kind of, I've really appreciated now just being like, wow, it is not okay to not know. It is really important for us as allies, quote unquote, to learn more and do the work. And that is something that I think hopefully doesn't just go away because the social media momentum has slowed down.
I agree. I think you summed it up absolutely perfectly. And I think, I mean, I'd be remiss to say that I didn't realize how much money was going towards police. Like I've always, I think I've always kind of had an understanding that they're receiving a lot. But I think when you think about what it's siphoning from other programs, like schools, like, man, I don't know, like just, I mean, when you think about education alone, and just kind of like the street for me, when I think about the streets and just kind of the infrastructure of like poor areas in Philadelphia, like those are areas that should be invested in more than the police. And I think that's kind of what people don't understand is kind of like, where will the money go if we do that? And I think it will be distributed to things that will just make the community better. That's what I'm hoping happens with the money. It really kind of depends on, that's why it's so important to pay attention to who you're voting for and figure out what their plans are and what policies they're supporting and, you know, what they prioritize, because it's important to understand, you know, if we defund the police, that's great, but where's that money going to go? So, yeah.
And you mentioned kind of from your perspective in healthcare, I saw a very poignant image, which was a black male doctor in his scrubs and then in normal attire. And they were side by side. And it was pretty shocking just to see. It was like, you respect me when I'm in my scrubs. And the second I'm on the street in my normal outfit, that goes out the window. And I cried. I did. I was like, especially during COVID too, it's just been devastating. The fact that I didn't even personally think about it, you know? And I try to think of myself as an anti-racist. I try to think of myself as an educated person. But knowing that I wasn't putting myself in my peers' shoes when I'm in a pretty diverse sport overall was like very disappointing to me. And that's something that I've been trying to have conversations with my fellow white teammates and just kind of giving my black teammates space and also just kind of working to be this advocate in a way that is just still like being supportive as well. So it's a challenge for sure. I mean, I don't look to black people to explain things to me. And I think that's something that white people are finally learning. Like, you got to do the work yourself.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I think that's huge. That's the first step. And I think, you know, on my end, like as a black individual, I think it is, I have gotten a lot of, I don't know what to do, help me, like, what do I do, what do I learn, what do I read, and those are frustrating, but at the same time, like, I do feel like, you know, like, I can help people out a little bit, and I know not everybody thinks similarly, but also not everybody learns the same way, which is why it is really important to figure out what works for you, and kind of figure it out yourself, which is, it's just kind of like, you know, going to school and taking classes. It's like, I mean, yeah, you're given a textbook, but if you don't learn well by just reading the textbook, then you watch a video or something like that. So I think, you know, this can be looked at very similarly when you're educating yourself. You have to figure out what works best for you. So, yeah.
Have you had some good conversations with your UPenn teammates in the past couple weeks about Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, so we actually started with a Zoom call with the full team, and two of our Black captains prepared like speeches, just based on how they were feeling, and just kind of the importance of this movement and how to be allies, and it was very moving conversation. I know it was very well received by everyone, and then we broke off into our respective event groups and continued to have those conversations, and I think people strategized, you know, how they could be better allies and whatnot. And I know there has been, just within the Penn athletic community, the Black cohort has been speaking with the athletic department about ways that the athletic department as a whole could be better allies and support the movement, and just kind of how to phrase the statements that they're putting out and whatnot. So honestly, Penn Athletics has done a very great job. I think it took a couple tries, but
yeah,
we're figuring it out and we're learning and we're growing. And I'm really proud of Penn Athletics for doing that and kind of being that beacon for other programs within the Ivy League to figure it out. And I mean, obviously with COVID, you know, the Ivy League was kind of the first to make their decision. Everybody else followed suit. So I do feel as though the Ivy League does have, you know, a pretty big responsibility and kind of, you know, handling situations like this and being a model for other schools and other programs too. So my hope is that this continues to expand and grow, and we continue to have these conversations within our academic communities.
Yeah, that you make such a great point there. I think that just having kind of, it sounds like you had a really productive conversation and on a Zoom call in a way that you guys are almost experts, where you had facilitators and broke up into groups, versus I hear a lot of conversations just get carried away because everyone just wants to share their personal experience. Black people and what everyone wants to share, like how they're feeling in a way that, and it could almost end up being unproductive because it's defensive versus productive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely true. I think the way that the Zoom call was structured was brilliant, and having, you know, two people perform, like prepare speeches and kind of opening the floor to other people to speak. But I think they covered a lot of ground where, you know, there wasn't really a need for anybody to speak more, but the people that did a very good job of articulating their perspectives as well. So it worked out really, really well.
Amazing. One of the other women I interviewed in this podcast is a sociology professor, and she's a Black female recreational runner. And we were kind of talking before, it was a couple of days before the national news kind of broke about Ahmaud Arbery. Mm-hmm. And one thing that Tiffany and I were discussing was kind of the whiteness of distance running, and kind of how if you look at track and field as a whole, you're like, oh, it's diverse. And then you look at distance running, you're like, just kidding. It's not at all. How have you felt being, you kind of straddle, like the 800 is truly a middle distance event, but you do cross country, which is a predominantly white sport as well. Like, how have you felt being a Black woman in that space?
Yeah, I've definitely felt very different from everyone else. And that's definitely, to be honest, a huge reason why I don't really like cross country as much as track, because I do feel like there's less people that I can relate to, or even like, I feel like I can't even talk to people about some things that I'm experiencing or some things that I'm feeling. And I know when I was being recruited at Penn, there was a specific middle distance group that kind of had, it was like kind of a mix between 400, 800 milers, and like those people didn't necessarily run cross country. And I was kind of excited about coming into a group like that. And then, you know, when the coaches changed a little bit, it was like, okay, now I'm a distance runner and now I'm in cross country. And I was the only individual of color. So I think that was very, like, it was a very different experience. But I think, you know, to anyone that's listening that is, like one of very few, or maybe the only person, of color or Black individual on their team, like, like you're supposed to be in that space. And just being in that space is doing a lot for not only for you, but for the Black community at large, is kind of, you know, immersing people in your experiences and your perspectives, even if you're not saying that much or saying anything about being Black, like it's felt by everybody. Your presence is definitely felt. And you're making an impact just by doing that. So I think, you know, I've had some really great people in my, out in my circle, outside of just my immediate training group that did a really good job of telling me, like, you're supposed to be here, you know, like you can do well here. And I think that really helped me have like the degree of success that I did have in cross country and prepare me well for track and, you know, not get too caught up in the color of everything and focus on, focus on what matters. So
putting the miles down and getting strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely something that I'm also a high school, middle school and high school coach at. And one thing that I was just thinking of is, why don't more people go into cross country? Why is it kind of just have this reputation, have this stereotype, and how, why doesn't it feel more open? And that's something that I'm looking to tackle in the upcoming weeks, is just really understanding what is this boundary. Cause we always talk about how running, you only need a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need anything. You just need a pair of shoes. And that's just not, it's just not true. Like, you need that space. You need to understand that you belong in that space. So I think that kind of the narrative of, oh, you don't need a lot to run, kind of pushes a lot of people out, because, all right, you have your pair of shoes and you still don't feel comfortable in that space. That's where I think there's a massive issue.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I remember in high school, my freshman year, a girl made a joke. It was a joke, and it was like funny until it hurt, but she made a comment about how she's like, man, you know, if it weren't for you, Nia, we would have had like a full blonde team this year. Like, we were so close. And I think I was kind of like, I think I like quickly laughed at the time, but it was very uncomfortable and I didn't know how to handle it. Like, like, I'm sorry, I'm not blonde. Like, sorry, I messed up the status quo of the situation. But I think that's, you know, it's just about feeling comfortable in the space that you're in. And I think high school is an especially challenging time. High school is just kind of an uncomfortable time for a lot of people. So
snap to that.
Yeah. Middle school is uncomfortable too, but high school is pretty uncomfortable. So I think, you know, for me, I was very fortunate in the fact that I felt like all of those girls on the team, even though they were different than me, they had my back. And I know not everybody is immersed in an environment like that, especially if they're not even Black, just any individual of color. Yeah. So I think, you know, that's really important. And I think I'm optimistic that in the future that'll improve after we're having all these conversations now, hopefully. So.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I think people are having conversations that they wouldn't even imagined of happening, you know? And
yeah,
it's kind of all these factors coming together, but I do, it's cool hearing you say that you're optimistic about the future.
I am. I am optimistic about 2021. Well, the rest of 2020, but mostly 2021.
So let's chat about 2021. We can put COVID aside for a moment, but what are your big goals?
Well, I think
life, personal, running, all of it.
Yeah. My biggest goal right now, honestly, is to transition pretty smoothly, and to be healthy. And I think what I'm learning now is just kind of how different aspects, just like recovery, nutrition, just kind of how all of those fit into running. I think as a nursing student, it's kind of more of a challenge to incorporate all of those things. So I think now that I'm solely focused on running for the time being, kind of figuring out how all of those pieces fit together. So that's my biggest goal right now, is to really utilize all my resources and to try to be the healthiest and most fit version of myself possible. My goal is also to pass the NCLEX. I'm really excited about that.
What does that stand for? I don't know that.
Honestly, I don't really know.
it's
just
standard.
The exit nursing exam. I should know. It's definitely the standardized test for nurses to become licensed.
What does that look like? Is there an oral examination part of it as well? Like, I have no idea.
It's strictly multiple choice. And there's, I think you sit for the test for quite a while. I know right now it's abbreviated because of COVID-19. So I think it's cut like 2 or 3 hours of test taking time.
You're like, I gotta get it now while it's short.
Yeah, I am thinking that. So it's definitely an incentive to study. But yeah, I think right now is a pretty great time to study too, because I have plenty of time for that. And on the track, I do have some big goals for the 8. I would like to make, obviously would like to make a team. Hopefully 2021 is the Olympic year and I get to make the team. And then I also would love to break 2.
Where are you at right goal. Now? 2 flat point.
I don't, is it really bad? I don't actually know my PR. It's 2 flat
honestly,
something.
I'm the same way. I'm like, oh, it's point something.
Yeah.
The big number they count.
Yeah, when somebody tells me my PR, when I hear it in an interview, I'm like, oh, wow, that's what it is.
Does that speak to you as a competitor that you're more interested in, like, winning the individual race than the time? I mean, you just said that breaking 2 is your goal, so obviously that's a goal. But yeah. When you go into a race, is it, I'm going to try to break 2 today, or is it, I'm going to win today? Or both?
I'm definitely more of a racer. I think I like definitely go into a race with the goal of winning, and if not winning, like to be the best second I could be, to be the best third I could be, and whatnot. My coach my freshman year used to say that all the time, and I think that's a great way to race, honestly, is to think like, okay, like going with the mindset of winning. And if that's not the case, best second, best third, because I think that's when you have amazing performances, is when you kind of, you don't give up if you don't get what you want. So yeah, I think that's another reason why this period has been so challenging, is because I know I'm a racer. So
I just be training. Honestly, I'm here with you so much. Someone asked me like, how you doing? I was like, well, I love to race. I struggle with training for training's sake. And yes. I love working out really hard. And I'm doing none of that.
Yeah, exactly. That was definitely the biggest struggle for me over these past couple months, especially when I was still in Philly, because we didn't really have access to
March,
a track.
And April, and yeah. Those were the worst East Coast months.
They really are, honestly. There's just a
and
lot
even
not working
relays.
With me. Yeah. Definitely gonna miss that. I think I had high hopes for this Penn relays because we had a really good team line up, and there were a couple relays that I think we could have tried and been really successful at.
Have you won a wheel?
Yeah, we won the distance medley relay in 2019, and that was the first time Ivy League females had won a wheel, which I didn't even realize that Ivy
what?
League females
I,
just
really
yeah I was surprised oh too. I was God. Like really, this is the first time this happened in 125 years, so
that's sad but amazing yeah. for you guys, also
kind of
sad.
Yeah, it is really sad, but it was really really sweet that it was done by the home team, the host team. I think it was also crazy, like the girls hadn't had one at their own school, so I think that was just especially sweet. Like, now that we're looking back on it, we're like, man, thank God that was last year. Like, we pulled it together just in time.
How did the legs go? So which were you? Were you the 12 or the 8?
I was the 1200 leg. And then it went to the 400 leg, which was Uche. And she just, like, blew it open. And then to Melissa Tanaka, who did a really good job on the 8 leg. And kind of kept us, we were just leading the whole time, to be honest. And then,
wow,
yeah, everybody just did great, just kind of time trial running, honestly, is kind of what it ended up being, just on their own. And then to Maddie, who was our anchor leg, and just like brought it in just very strong throughout her entire leg and focus. Cause that's the scary leg. that's when things change up
leg.
A lot is the mile leg. And she did a fantastic job, and the pictures prove it, just like the excitement and everything. It was honestly the dream team. I'm glad that it came together with the DMR too, because that's the most like interdisciplinary relay. This is kind of like you got, you know, people from Maddie's like
and
great in cross country
now,
and
right?
Uche. Yeah. Yeah, we do. So really exciting. Glad that we got that. So.
And it's just such an iconic meet, you know, and being the home team, I'm sure you had to do so much behind the scene. I wonder, what is it like being a UPenn athlete at the Penn Relays? Because I competed all throughout high school at the Penn Relays.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so from New Jersey, I did it a ton, and it was always just, it's such a production. It's like you're in the corral, you're so scared because they're like, you gotta go, and you finish and the baton is instantly out of your hand. It's so well-oiled machine, and the fans are just best in the world.
It is crazy. It is honestly, yeah, that the stadium gets packed really quickly. I think Penn Relays Week is kind of crazy as a Penn student because there's a lot going on campus. We have Quaker Days, which is our, like, that's when incoming freshmen come in to visit the school as well. And then it's reading day, so it's just before finals, except for nurses, it's like we have our finals week during that week. So it's pretty crazy. But we get badges so we can enter the stadium at our leisure, which is really nice. We always feel really like privileged to just kind of walk in and, you know, have our nice little badges and stuff. Which is why it was great that last year, like, it was more than just a badge. Like, we were also a team that, like, took home a wheel, which was cool, too. Because, like, we have our badges and everything. But, yeah, we're just, like, Villanova, like, those are the big guys. Like, oh, that's the real
team. Yeah, I was going to say that. Like, Villanova, we always used to joke, like, Villanova peaks for Penn. They peak for Penn Relays. Like, they must. They win everything.
They're pretty fantastic. Yeah. So, it's definitely cool to get it that one time.
But, how heavy is the wheel?
Oof, I don't know. I have a little baby wheel from
the big one though. I don't understand how it stands up.
I never carried it alone, so I couldn't tell you.
Did they put it in your hand though? Because the way that the pictures are always what people are holding, I'm like, I don't understand. I feel like it would fall forward or backwards. That might be a really dumb question.
Yeah, no, it's pretty. It's mostly wood. So it's like kind of light. It's just an awkward shape and size, but it's like perfect that everybody gets to touch it. I don't remember being afraid that it was going to fall over. So I'm assuming it's not that heavy, but not sure.
So did you ever have HEPS at Penn?
Outdoors? Yes. Yes.
See, maybe it's an unpopular opinion. The worst, because it's not Penn Relays.
Yeah, it is definitely different. The stadiums are like empty, but for us that was a breakthrough. Like, that was our first time winning outdoor.
What year was this?
I was my sophomore year. Okay. So 2018. Yeah. So that was fun for us because a lot of our friends and family were there at home. And but it was a lot of Franklin Field running, for sure, because we had a home meet not too long before that, and then obviously Penn Relays. So
I was like running there. I just felt like you were very far away from the track itself when we had HEPS there, because the stands, you don't feel it in Penn Relays because there's so many people, but yes. It's like you're in lane one and your fans are 25 feet away.
Yeah. That's so true. Now that I think about it, it definitely feels different. I guess for us, it's probably a little different because we train there every day. So we're probably kind of used to like how it's a little awkward that there's nobody there. But I completely understand how for you guys, you're probably like, what is this? This is not Penn Relays.
And you guys are getting an indoor track too, I heard. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. It is in the works. I think hopefully it's still in the works despite all this, but I know that, you know, the architects have come in and have given their 2 cents and everything. So it sounds like it's working. I think it'd be the first and the only indoor facility in Philadelphia.
Oh, wow. You probably have to share with the schools, maybe.
Yeah, probably. Honestly, it's going to be a great, it'd be cool if we had an indoor Penn Relays. Now that would be cool.
Oh, so this, my next question was going to be, how connected do you think you're going to stay with? I mean, obviously Ivy League alumni are crazy. We all know this.
Yeah.
But kind of how connected are you planning to stay? I know you mentioned kind of creating this legacy over kind of these important conversations you guys have been having, but also kind of just in general, how do you see yourself being this alumni figure now to your old team?
I'm not sure. I'm still trying to figure out what that looks like. I'm definitely going to be one of those crazed alumni that's always paying attention to what's going on and cheering them on. But I think the more behind the scenes alumni stuff is what I'm hoping to look more into and figure out how to be a part of those conversations and making sure like the alumni are also informed and everything that's going on, which honestly isn't really too much of an issue. Our alumni are fantastic, and they have done a really great job of supporting us through everything that's happened so far. So, yeah, I'm excited to be an alum. Well, I am an alum. So.
Probably doesn't feel
it's
that
exciting
way.
Being an alum. Yeah.
To switch back to running, and then I have a great last question, but who are some of your role models or women that you look up to in the sport?
In the sport? I just did another podcast, and I mentioned Raven Rogers. She's a big one for me because when I was transitioning from high school to college, I naturally just turned on the NCAA championships, and that was kind of my first time doing that. And I just remember thinking, like, she's won this so many years in a row. That's crazy.
Yeah,
like,
she's on the Bowerman Tower top, now.
Yeah, it's pretty – she deserves it, honestly. I think people don't understand that in the NCAA, to be on top and to stay there, you can't just be stagnant. You also have to be improving. Like, you have to be way better than you were the year before or even the season before. So that's always been really impressive to me. Anyone in the 800, honestly, is a huge idol to me. And trying to think of who else. I mean, this is kind of cheesy, but I mean, a lot of my teammates just are like amazing to me. I think just within my training group, all of those girls, and even the class underneath me, just the way that they came into the program and were just like, we're winning this. I love that too. And I think even though, you know, like I've accomplished so much or whatever, like when I toe the line at HEPS, like I'm nervous too, like anything can happen. So I think knowing that, you know, other people on my team are going in with the mindset of like, we're doing this, you know, like we're just going to make sure nothing bad happens. We're going to be our best out there. I think that is so inspiring and so motivating, especially when you're in the Ivy League. It's different.
I know, you're the little guy. You gotta come in and you gotta pump your chest out a little bit and be like, I belong here, yeah. I promise.
Honestly, yeah, and they've done a fantastic job, and I think it's leaked into the upperclassmen too. We're kind of getting that mindset of like, you know, even though we've done it, it's different when you come in with that mentality. It's just a different level of confidence. So I think, you know, it's been contagious. So yeah. Definitely my team and the eight girls. But I mean, our sport is evolving and turning over so much that, you know, I'm just, every single time I'm at a meet, I'm like, I found a new person to be inspired by, no matter what level it is. So yeah.
That's incredible. No, I think one thing that, for me, being a professional runner for only about a year now, I kind of did the opposite thing where I worked for a couple of years and then went back into running. But I definitely struggled with kind of the individualist aspect of it because, like you said, I had a really phenomenal team, and kind of transforming that to be like, oh, I have a team now, but it's different. You know, we're all adults. Yeah. We have other stuff going on. So I think it's holding onto those relationships and knowing how powerful they are and that those people will always be there for you. And then in your professional career, being like, yes, it is about, I'm an individual, but I'm also inspiring so many people, which I really think that you are.
Thank you. Wow. Yeah, that was so beautifully said. I'm really glad that you, I mean, I expect pretty much any Ivy League school to kind of have a similar experience where like your team is more like a family and you just have great experiences. And that sticks with you. So, yeah.
So the last question, and I've had some fun responses. I need to be better about asking everyone, but I'm a new podcaster, so I'm going to give myself a break. Is you're at your retirement party.
Okay.
What do you want to be known for? So maybe it's running, maybe it's nursing. You kind of are looking back at your career. You're retired, and people are up there giving speeches. So what are they saying about Nia?
I think at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter like how much you've accomplished. If just kind of the person you were like was just bad. So I think I just kind of want to be remembered for just being happy and just like being kind to people at the end of the day. I think I've been FaceTiming a lot of my friends since I'm like now in Seattle. They're like, wow, you look so happy. And I think, you know, that's the goal. Like, that's what I want to continue to be. I want to continue to be happy and be running well. So, and you know, treating people well. So I think that's my goal.
That is a phenomenal, beautiful goal. What Beyonce's song is the beginning, like, at the end of the day, I just want to be happy.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember now. There's something along those lines, but that just sticks with you too. And I think for me, maybe you too, you seem like you run your best when you're happy as well.
Yeah, that's so true. That's kind of what I was insinuating there. It was like, even if it's not breaking world records and making teams, just like, if you're happy, if you're not happy and you're doing those things, it just doesn't mean that much to you, and it doesn't mean that much to the people around you either. So it's definitely the thing that really needs to come together first for runners, is to just finding a space where they're happy. So yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see you kill it in, well, obviously 2020, but who knows, but 2021.
Thank you. Knocking on wood right now.
I know. Me too. I'm knocking on wood. Are you superstitious? I kind of am, just a little
bit. Yeah, I am a little bit.
More Than Running with Dana Giordano is brought to you by the Sidious Mag Podcast Network. This episode was produced by Chris Chavez, music by Anna Sophia. I'm your host, Dana Giordano. Thank you for listening, and thank you for running.
I only want a few close friends. The rest just pretend. I turn to people kissing in the stairwell. I want this day to end. Text my mama so I don't lose hope. I didn't learn anything I didn't know. Always yelling, get off your phone. Screw that, I'm going home. But did you hand that in? Nah, I'ma take a zero. Just call.